The Chiefs are going to end the season where they began the season, in Glendale, Arizona, and Super Bowl 57.
That was a call on the Chiefs Radio Network. Of course, the Chiefs punching their ticket to the Super Bowl for the third time in 4 years, 3 out of 5 years with Patrick Mahomes as their starting quarterback. And they've been to the AFC title game, of course, 5 years in a row. And now they've gone to the Super Bowl 60% of the time. And now you like to see them win the Super Bowl 40% of those 5 years, as this is their third appearance, as we mentioned. They're 1-1 in their last two. And here to talk about the Chiefs is Seren Petro of Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, host of the program weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 2 to 6 p.m. And Seren boldly predicted that that the team that scored the most points was going to win this game in the AFC title game, and he nailed that one, absolutely. And once again, it was a field goal game. It came down to the final seconds. And I guess, Seren, I'm going to start a little differently than I think a lot of people across the country and maybe even in Kansas City, because, trust me, we'll get to it, about Patrick Mahomes playing on basically one leg. But when I want to go back a little bit. When Tyreek Hill was traded, I remember right away a lot of people were freaking out and panicking, and I understand it, but we talked about it on our show, and I'm sure you guys did too, that this is an opportunity to actually lengthen the window for the Chiefs. They can go younger. They got more draft picks, more draft capital. They've got more money freed up by not paying a guy $30 million a year, and that might be a blessing in disguise that Davante Adams ended up getting that big contract with the Raiders, that the Raiders may have, in a weird way, did the Chiefs a favor. And the next thing you know, he drafted a lot of defensive players, and many of those players had a huge impact in the game against the Bengals. And, of course, Chris Jones stepped up. And so, basically, there are two focal points I've had since the game on Sunday. I think obvious part is Mahomes did what he did. But to me, the two things that stand out that I like to focus on with you initially is, one, the defense and the changes that they made and how they got younger and more athletic in the offseason. And then two, well, probably three, two, Spags' scheme and his plan, which worked to perfection. And then Chris Jones having his coming out party. Not that he wasn't a great player, but we'd always talked about how, when was he going to come up big in a gigantic game? And man, did he ever. So I like to start with that side of the coin, because I think everybody's talking about Mahomes and he deserves his credit. But my goodness, the Chiefs had to play differently once they traded Tyreek Hill. And I thought that showed up with flying colors in the win over the Bengals.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, it's something I remember talking with you about, that fans have a hard time getting their arms around. First of all, you know, next year they announced that the NFL salary cap is going to be $225 million. How do we, as mere mortal men, get our arms around what $225 million is, or what a four-year, $50 million contract is, or a one-year, five-year, $125 million contract? Like, those numbers have gotten so big that I think it's hard for fans to really, you know, get their arms around what all is going on. But it was a moment where, you know, the Chiefs really, in my opinion, it was the last year for them to begin to do what they've begun to do. I made a case that they could have, you know, been moving on from Chris Jones when his last contract came around. That once they established that Patrick Mahomes was MVP caliber and Hall of Fame, this is what you do. You turn and burn everything else around him. You play players when they're in the prime of their careers. You trade them when they're headed out of the prime of their careers. And you keep no bad contracts anywhere around Patrick Mahomes. It's what you have to do to be successful when you have a quarterback that's going to take up, you know, let's be real. I mean, he's going to take up more than 20% of their salary, 20% of their cap next year. So, you know, it was a smart move. They kept the band together for about a three-year run to try to knock it out. It was over. They got a championship. They got two conference championships, and they moved on from Tyreek Hill, and they got draft picks. By the way, they have 12 draft picks for next year. And that capital gives you the ability to, one, trade for proven commodities, trade for players, which they've done over the years, but also maneuver within it, whether it's to move up to get Trent McDuffie or move down, which is what they did later on, to pick up more picks. With all those draft picks, that's really the bulk of the trading in the NFL, is within the draft. So you need picks to maneuver around and be flexible. They did it. They did a great job of identifying that at pick 21, there was one more real first-round pick on the board. There generally aren't 32 first-round picks. There's anywhere from, in a bad year, 10 to, in a good year, 25 of them, really. But there really isn't, you know, 32 good first-round picks. Somebody's going to be called a first-round pick, but they're not really of that pedigree. They saw Trent McDuffie as the last one of the bunch and at a position of need. They let Charvarius Ward go. I think also something that doesn't get talked about enough, that they walked on their number one corner, and he started for the 49ers in the NFC Championship game. And they knew they needed that position, which I'm not usually a big fan of drafting for need, But they saw a guy that was not just a need, but was still first-round caliber. They moved up and got McDuffie. And when he's played, he's made a real difference for this team. Then stayed put at the bottom of round one and got George Karlaftis, a guy that had some, you know, warts. There were reasons why, even though early on people were talking about him going very high, that was because of his athleticism. But he's a very unpolished defensive lineman. To the coaching staff's credit, not only, you know, you mentioned the drafting of these players, but the development of these players. Yeah. 5.5 sacks in the last 7 games for George Karlaftis. He got better. He started developing some moves. He's still primarily just a bull rusher, and it's one of the reasons why they like to move him inside and let Chris Jones work outside in obvious passing downs. But he's developed a lot more, a secondary move, an ability to get off once the tackle locks onto him. And he made an impact and got a sack in that game. You know, they have 3 rookie corners playing. Once L'Jarius Sneed goes down on the 4th snap of the game, all 3 of their rookie corners have to play. Brian Cook, their rookie safety, plays. 5 guys really played significant minutes that were rookies, significant snaps for this football team on the defensive side. And I think it's the most underrated, you know, story out there. I love that you led with it, Wade, because I think eventually, during the course of 2 weeks of people talking about it, especially next week when all the media is down there and they just zero in and write story after story after story on these 2 teams, someone's going to get around to the job that Brett Veach did. Somebody's going to look at that depth chart and see all the rookies that are contributing. You know, and it's going to get a lot more pub. But it's really I don't want to say the key. The key is obviously Patrick Mahomes. But around Patrick Mahomes, once you get that piece in place, being able to then put the rest of the team around him gets a lot harder when they get expensive. And that's the turd in the punch bowl for the Cincinnati Bengals, right? They're on that rookie contract for Joe Burrow. That's what was so great about, you know, getting to the conference championship game in Patrick Mahomes' first year as a starter and second year with the team and winning it his 3rd year. They checked those boxes and they got it done when it was the best opportunity to do it. You go look at the championships, they're almost exclusively won by quarterbacks on that first contract. Tom Brady's the exception. Eli Manning was an exception. Peyton Manning was an exception. But Russell Wilson's Super Bowl appearances, rookie contract. Ben Roethlisberger, rookie contract. I mean, it is really hard to do it once you get to where you really have to pay the quarterback. And the Chiefs are in that mode. The Bills and Bengals aren't, and both of them failed to capitalize on taking advantage of the huge advantage they have of having a top-shelf quarterback that's not expensive. Meanwhile, the Chiefs are making all the right moves, it appears, to keep that team strong around him. And it's, I think, the most underreported thing on this team going into the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Sky Moore, of course, came up big with that punt return. I was so happy for him because I think, like, we can all be honest, we were a little bit nervous when he was back to return the punt. Like, please, God,
that's
don't.
An understatement.
Please, God, don't muff the punt. And then, of course, Pacheco's a 7th-round pick. Jalen Watson's 7th-round pick. He's had 2 playoff interceptions. The interception against the Chargers, listen, that was a huge win. Think about it. The Chiefs don't get that pick 6 from Watson, they may lose the Charger game early in the year. They don't have home field advantage in the playoffs. 1 game is the difference. Pacheco, of course, has been terrific this year once he became the feature back, 7th-round draft pick. So Brett Veach can't get enough credit, in my opinion, for what he was able to do and keep this. Like I said, they've lengthened the window with this team by making all of those moves. And as you said, they have so much flexibility this offseason as well. And by the way, we need to send a thank you card to the Buffalo Bills for a couple of things. One, we should have already sent many thank you cards before. One, allowing us to trade so we could get Patrick Mahomes. That was nice of them back in the day. And then also, the Chiefs then maneuvered and drafted and moved ahead of the Bills. And there were reports the Bills were interested in getting McDuffie. And the Chiefs maneuvered with their draft picks and was able to jump the Bills and get McDuffie. So once again, I think Brett Veach should be credited for that as well. Let's talk about the game itself a little bit, Seren. The defense, I mean, for crying out loud, Chris Jones was awesome. Frank Clark played well. Karlaftis had a sack. Mike Dana, I think, doesn't get as much credit as he should get. He basically had a sack early in the game, and Burrow bent over, and he kind of flew over the top of him, and I think Frank Clark cleaned up. But Steve Spagnuolo's been under fire. Of course, the easiest thing to do as a Chiefs fan is when the defense struggles, let's fire the DC. We got to get somebody else in here. But this is a guy that took down Tom Brady and the undefeated Patriots and held him to, I believe, 14 points. He has had some great game plans in his career. He's got a few rings to show for it. And, man, did they! I heard Andy after the game, Seren, in the post game, they asked about the defense, and he said that the players all week long on the defensive side of the ball were giddy. They couldn't wait to get out there because they had so much faith that the plan by Spags was going to work, and they just had to go out and execute it. What did you think about Spags and the defense and how they performed against Cincinnati?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it was a Bengals team that can thank snow for how, I'm not going to say for beating the Bills, but for how well they looked against the Bills. I mean, that was one of the things. I talked to Tim Grunhard, and I'll talk to him later today as well, but last week we talked about that Bills-Bengals game, and he said snow is the best friend of an offensive lineman. Like, you mess up the footing, it's a distinct advantage for the offensive lineman because you can lock on, get your hands on him. Like, that's what defensive linemen don't want. They want to get out quick. They want to get your hands knocked around and try to get leverage where they're already on their way by you before you can lock on. The snow took that away, and those Bengals offensive linemen were able to really center up guys, lock onto them, and protect better than really they would have been able to do if they'd have been on a dry track. And I think Spagnuolo recognized that and knew, all right, listen, let's look at the forecast. Early on in the week, looked like we might have precipitation. Very quickly, it started to go away that it was going to be a dry track, and I think he knew, I've got an advantage up here. And not just, you know, coincidentally because the Bengals, you know, are hurt. But, you know, we mentioned it. Karloftis coming down the stretch is playing better. Frank Clark has been healthy. We're getting some of his best football. Carlos Dunlap. Colin Saunders has done a great job of coming on and being a trash man that can clean up anything when the pocket gets flushed. And he had 4.5 sacks and is given much more of a rush addition next to Chris Jones on the inside than Derek Nnadi. So he's worked his way into that rotation a lot more. And even Derek Nnadi has had some moments where he's at least collapsing the pocket back. And so they collectively got better with that front four. And Spagnuolo loves to blitz, and at times he's really needed a blitz. Against the Buffalo Bills in that regular season game, they were bringing six on every single play, still not getting there, worn out, and just completely out of gas. And there was fear from a lot of us that, like, is Spags going to not be able to keep his hand out of the cookie jar, and is he going to go to that blitz constantly? And to his credit, he didn't. He had some well-timed blitzes that seemed to take them by surprise, even though they know he's a notorious blitzer. And overall, he trusted in his front four to get pressure, and they routinely did that. And I think that was the key to the game. Sometimes it's just letting your guys do their job, recognizing how they've grown, what their talent is, and let them just go beat the guy across from them. And even when that happens, you know, Steve Spagnuolo, they're still scheming in it. It's not like it's like, well, you know, Steve just set his clipboard down and watched the game. No, he did a great job of moving Chris Jones around to get him one-on-one. And there's more to it than that. You show a blitz. There's one of Chris Jones' sacks. I think Nick Bolton's up in the gap next to him and forces that guard or center to stay home and lets Chris Jones work one-on-one against the guard. He just blows him up. He's just right by him. That doesn't happen if that guard knows he's got help from the center. Right, if Nick Bolton doesn't at least bluff that blitz, that guard can overplay to the outside because he knows that center's going to help him if he turns inside. Couldn't do it. Had to try to square him up one-on-one, so Chris Jones beat him to the outside. That's the design that Steve Spagnuolo had. So even at times when it looks simple and like Spagnuolo's not doing something, where he moves those chess pieces around the board affects how the protection works. And even, you know, some of the bluffs are there that allowed Chris Jones to work one-on-one. So Spagnuolo did a great job of allowing Chris Jones to really showcase his talent.
Saran Petro, he is the host of the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, Monday through Fridays, weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. Join us today to talk Chiefs football. Chiefs, of course, going to the Super Bowl yet again. This is something I haven't heard a lot of people talk about, and I'm a little bit curious about it. And I've seen this from numerous teams. Andy Reid catches a lot of heat from people about, you know, going away from the run, 20 passes and 21 attempts. I do think there's times he completely kind of, not necessarily forgets about it, but he does get away from it. I think that's a valid criticism at times. But there are other teams that do it too. Mike McDaniel, I saw the Dolphins against the Bills, were running all over the Bills on a Thursday night game, I believe it was. And then all of a sudden, it was third and short, second and, I mean, he just went away from running the football. And they were dominating the line of scrimmage, didn't understand it. I'm not going to say the Bengals clearly weren't dominating the line of scrimmage. We know that. We've established that with the pass rush. But are you a little bit surprised? Because this game, only at one point was it a two-possession game, 13-3. I look at the final stats, and I thought about it when I was watching the game, that they really didn't run running as much. I kind of feared that a little bit with the Bengals. They're usually balanced. They can take so much time off the clock. One of my biggest concerns about this game and why I didn't like the Chiefs' chances was how many times we see the Bengals take 7 minutes off the clock and shorten the game because they mix in the short passing game, and then they've got the run with Mixon and P. Ryan, short passes even to the running backs. And they only ran the ball 17 times out of 63 offensive snaps, and only one time were they down by two scores. Is that something the Chiefs' defense did to dictate to the Bengals not to run the ball, or did the Bengals maybe go away from something that maybe could have worked?
Well, yes and yes and yes, all to some degree, right? It's never one thing. Sure. It's always an accumulation of many things. Look, you're right, and I was a little surprised the Bengals didn't try to do a better job of running the football. I mean, number one, I think they bought their own hype. Yep. You know, what is it, Peter Schrager or Schlegel or whatever on Good Morning Football? I got a lot of run this past week because he said, well, if Joe Burrow wins this game, there's no way you can say Patrick Mahomes is a better quarterback. First of all, I mean, I can say that, you know, Tyler Palko is the best quarterback that ever lived. You can't stop me from saying it.
Sure.
And there'd be plenty of evidence that would validate that Patrick Mahomes is still better than Joe Burrow had he lost this game. One of which would be, and this is where I think they started thinking, okay, the run's not there. It was so easy last time. They were getting 6, 8 yards, seemingly all the time. Never, I don't think they had a run over 13 yards in that first game. Like, every run, usually when a team averages like 6 yards a carry, it's because they had a 72-yarder.
Yep.
And there's plenty of negative ones and a 2 and a 3 and a 1 that don't really advance the chains much. But overall, it ends up averaging 6 yards a carry. That first game against the Bengals was a freak show of just 6, 6, 6, 6. That's an offensive coordinator's dream. When he knows that he can get to a short down and distance on second and third, everything's open. Everything's available on that play sheet. And that's what they did. This time they weren't having that kind of success. And I think they bought into the hype about Joe Burrow being better than Patrick Mahomes. And just a quick look at the stats. Through his first 6 playoff games, right, that's how many Joe Burrow's played. Compared to Patrick Mahomes, the completion percentage is kind of comparable. The number of attempts is kind of comparable. Mahomes has 700 more yards. Or maybe it's 500 more yards. It's 9 touchdowns and 4 interceptions for Joe Burrow. It's 17 touchdowns and 2 interceptions for Patrick Mahomes in his first 6 games. Joe Burrow is not operating at a Patrick Mahomes level, not even the Patrick Mahomes when he was young, right? He's just not. And that's with all the weapons. You know, I think it'd be easy to say that even with Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, the Bengals with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase have their equal, right? And then throw in Tyler Boyd. There's never been a Tyler Boyd caliber third receiver for the Chiefs. And Hayden Hurst is a good tight end. He's one of the guys I really wanted the Chiefs to sign this past offseason. So, you know, the weaponry's been there. The production's not. He's not as good as Patrick Mahomes. So they should have stayed and had a more concentrated effort to get that running game going. But credit Steve Spagnuolo. They're 2 running backs, 13 carries for 41 yards. Right? Like, they weren't getting production, and they got away from it. And that's one of the things that Doug Peterson didn't do. You know, when the Jaguars came back and their big come from behind win against the Chargers, they ran the ball 19 times in the first half. In a route to getting down 27-0 and then cutting it to 27-7, they stayed with the run.
Yeah.
And this is one where Zach Taylor, he got beat. He got beat by Spagnuolo. He got beat by Andy Reid. He beat Reid in the past, particularly in the end game management. But he just got beaten this one, and yes, they should have run the ball more. You know, we can't sit and scream about the analytics about how much more efficient passing is and then complain when they pass,
yes.
Right? It is what it is. You're a passing team. You can see the one-yard problems, the third and ones, the fourth and ones for the Chiefs show what this team is. They just do not come out and practice moving bodies. And they're not good at it, and they're never going to be good at it. And so the idea that you can just hand off and we're going to get these yards, it has to be the changeup to the passing game fastball. It's just the way they're built, and we have to accept it as fans.
Yeah, and we've seen a few games this year. I remember the Raider game where the Chiefs were pass, 17-0, and then Andy went to the running game, and next thing you know, they became more balanced, and then that took a little pressure off Mahomes because he was under siege in that first half. And that kind of changed the game, and the Raiders had to respect that run. So I think it's the timing of the calling of those runs, obviously, as well. And by the way, a couple of things. One, apparently Jake Plummer is a better quarterback than Tom Brady. Because Jake Plummer was 3-0 against Tom Brady, plus one of those wins was against Brady in the playoffs. So that's what I say to Peter Schrager, whatever his name is, in regards to the head-to-head matchups. That's, to me, just silly. Secondly, I've heard the argument, well, you gave all those stats, and they're great stats, and I agree with you 1,000%. And I've heard somebody come back on that argument and say, yeah, but Burrow's had to play a whole bunch of road games, and Mahomes has never played a game on the road. And I say, you know what? I'll spin that back in your face. Mahomes is so great, he doesn't have to play on the road in the playoffs. Because every game counts, and he brings it every week. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why you want to penalize a guy for winning the games it takes to get home field advantage.
Right.
Isn't that what you
exactly.
want? Isn't that what every owner wants?
Yes.
Turnstiles turning in the playoffs?
Yeah.
And listen, there'll be a time that he has to go on the road in the postseason, and I frankly think everybody will hate it because I think he'll probably win that game as well.
Me too.
I mean, the guy is now 11-3 as a starter in the postseason. 11-3. There's no... you know, riffraff. There's no 4 or 5 win team that you're going up against in the playoffs, and he's 11-3. You know, there's just no way to ding him. Maybe there's some things he hasn't done yet because he hasn't had the opportunity or hasn't had the longevity yet to accumulate the counting stats to a degree the way other quarterbacks have. But there's nothing at this point in his career that the man has not accomplished. And if he wins his second Super Bowl, at age 27, he's pacing towards a 7-championship type of career. Now, I think that's still a long shot, just because of all the things that have to go. But 5 straight AFC Championship games played in your home stadium absolutely speaks to the fact that he is the driving force, even more than Andy Reid. He is the driving force, and when you start with that piece, everything else gets easier to put around him.
Two-part question here. How important was it for the Chiefs to win that game Sunday from the perspective of you've been in 5 straight AFC title games? And then second, what does it do for Mahomes' legacy, obviously playing hurt? And so the first part I want to extend upon is the narrative today. If there's not an unnecessary roughness called, which was clearly the right call, but if the guy holds up and he doesn't hit Mahomes, I'm not convinced the Chiefs get enough yardage to kick a field goal. We're probably going to overtime is what I think, because they were down so many guys. And in overtime, I think if Chiefs fans were being honest with themselves, if you polled every Chiefs fan going into overtime, I think more Chiefs fans would have said the Bengals are going to win because of the Chiefs, all the injuries they had within that game and Mahomes being hobbled. So it is a slim, slim margin between winning and losing. And Mahomes made obviously a great play with his legs for the Chiefs to win. It was a complete team effort. But if that didn't happen, you could easily be sitting here today, Seren, talking about how the Chiefs are 2-3 in AFC title games. They're only going to the Super Bowl twice in the 5 years they've hosted AFC title games. And then you could start talking a little bit about, okay, are the Chiefs going to be the Atlanta Braves, who won all kinds of division titles and had all these great 100-win seasons, made it to the NLCS, but yet only had one Super Bowl championship to show for it? And I guess technically, if you lose to the Eagles, you could still maybe try to fight and use that argument. But 2-3 in 5 straight AFC title games at home is not good percentages. You should win more than you lose when you're at home. How important was it for the Chiefs to make sure that that wasn't the narrative that we're talking about today and the legacy of Mahomes winning that game straight up against Burrow?
Yeah, I think it was giant. And I think, you know, the Bengals were starting to take ownership of the Chiefs' mind. I mean, 3 in a row, you've got to stop that. They're a dangerous team. They're a talented team. They will beat the Chiefs in the years to come. They're not going to just, roll over and die. But I think it was important, as you said, to one, gain back some momentum against one of your chief rivals. And then when you talk about the historical card, yeah, if you want to be truly great, when you've got a team that's good enough to win it, you got to cash. And sometimes you steal a Super Bowl that's not yours. That's what the Chiefs are trying to do. This is the Bills Super Bowl.
Yep.
And the Chiefs are stealing it. The Bengals knocked them out, and now the Chiefs are going to steal it. You know, 19 was the Ravens Super Bowl. The Chiefs stole it. 20 was the Chiefs Super Bowl. The Bucs stole that from them with the help, obviously, of injuries. And that's part of what happens along the way. And I think, you know, Josh Allen's was a banged up guy coming down the stretch, and I think that helped the Bengals and helped the Chiefs. When you get here, what you want to do is, one, be good enough to get to this spot, and then take advantage of the opportunities when they're presented to you, and that's what the Chiefs did. And for legacy standpoint, first of all, you know, the Bengals would have become the team in the AFC. They would be the team to beat. Win or lose in the Super Bowl, they would have won 2 conference championship games at your place. There's no way the Chiefs could say that they're a better team. Now you have a chance to continue to kind of have that mystique that you are the team to beat in the AFC. And from a legacy standpoint for Andy Reid, it's important to get to another Super Bowl. It's important to win another championship and not just be one of those coaches that only has one. For Patrick Mahomes, you know, you can't get to 3 or 4 or 5. If you want to be in the conversation for the greatest quarterback, greatest player of all time, one championship's not going to get it done. Aaron Rodgers' name never gets mentioned. He may be the best thrower of the football, the most accurate. He never gets mentioned for the greatest quarterback of all time because he has one championship. So you talk legacy, yes, he needs to get that second one, and probably a third or fourth. I don't think you have to have 8 more than Tom Brady right. to be in a conversation and to maybe win out as being the best player of all time. Michael Jordan has 6. Bill Russell has 11. Bill Russell's not considered the greatest player in NBA history. Michael Jordan is. So, you know, he doesn't have to get to 8, but he can't have 1 and be in that conversation for the best player of all time. And now he's poised to add a second with a third appearance in the Super Bowl, and at 27 years old, very much on pace to be in a conversation for the greatest quarterback of all time.
All right, so let's look ahead. Super Bowl, of course, coming up in a few weeks in Glendale, Arizona. The Eagles, you know, they looked really good in the playoffs. They also played Daniel Jones. They played Josh Johnson and Brock Purdy, who got hurt early in the game. I was looking at their schedule. The two best quarterbacks that they have played is Aaron Rodgers. The Packers scored 33 on him. And the Cowboys, they played them twice. The first time, Dak did not play. The second time, Dak Prescott and the Cowboys scored 40. Should be pointed out, Jalen Hurts didn't play in that second game. The Eagles' schedule doesn't look gigantically tough when I go week by week. They do have a few good wins, don't get me wrong. But they haven't seen anybody quite like Mahomes this year, although they did meet. Didn't they meet last year? Did they meet in Philadelphia last year? Was that 2 years ago?
Last year? They played the Eagles last year, and the Chiefs beat them 42-30, and it was really a number of scores late that the Eagles kind of hung around, and then the Chiefs extended out to a 35-23 lead, 42-23 at one point before the Eagles grabbed a touchdown with 4 seconds to go to make it 42-30 and make it look a little bit more respectable. And the Eagles have made some nice additions, A.J. Brown being one of them, but Hassan Reddick, they've added some pieces to this team. They're better than that team. But, yes, the Chiefs went up and down the field. And to your point about the schedule, 29th toughest. Right? Fourth easiest. Let's put it that way. Fourth easiest schedule in the NFL the Eagles had. So, listen, are they a good team? Yes, we both agree that they're a very good football team. They have all the pieces it takes to win a championship. But the idea that they're some monolith or some unbeatable team or frankly that they should even be favored against the Kansas City Chiefs is wrong. It's public sentiment. It's the want to see somebody dethrone the king that has, I think, the momentum around the Philadelphia Eagles, because there is nothing about the mathematical breakdowns on this that would tell you that they've proven themselves to be definitively better than the Chiefs. So, yeah, the Chiefs play the 9th toughest schedule in the NFL. So, I do think that there's a little more hype than actual substance around the Philadelphia Eagles, but they are a very good team.
Hey, let the Chiefs be an underdog and play the disrespect card. They played it well this past week against the Bengals, so the Eagles can be a favorite as far as I'm concerned. What is your biggest concern going into this game with the Eagles here in a few weeks? I know Andy Reid's good with extra time to prepare. I'm obviously concerned about all the injuries the Chiefs had from this last game, and then I know there are some questions, and I think I heard it on your show yesterday that, and I think it's a valid point. You know, how much gas is in the tank? Thankfully, you don't play right away this weekend, but that was such a emotional, huge. They had loaded up and was ready to fire all the salvos from Kelce and Jones and Clark, and even Mahomes got his little dig in post game interview. They were ready to fire their shots. So they had been thinking all week long what they were going to do when they beat the Bengals. They wanted that game. What are your thoughts early on about this matchup?
Yeah, first injuries, right? Yeah. They got a lot of guys that went down in that game. Is L'Jarius Sneed going to be back? They're a much better team if they can get him out on the field. They got great experience for the young corners having to play that whole game. But, you know, they're a better football team and can do a lot more things with him. He's just such a Swiss Army knife. So is he going to be through the concussion protocol and ready to play? I think that's a giant piece of the puzzle. Just the health all around. Travis Kelce was a game time decision because of back spasms. Where's he going to be? He's not getting any younger, and I think that's one of the things the Chiefs might need to start thinking about. Like, yep. Do they have to lessen the workload on him? Get somebody else that can, you know, be more effective as a tight end. That's a question for the future. But, you know, his health. I think health overall, number one. Two, you're right. Is the tank on empty? Did they just win their Super Bowl? You know, did they get over the Mount Everest of the team that's beat them 3 times and was talking trash, and now they don't have anything left in the tank? I think that's a question, and Andy Reid's got to try to answer that. And if it is on empty, he's got to try to fill it up this week. And then protection. You know, good football teams rally around a backup quarterback for one game. Well, he's not a backup, but it was a hurt quarterback, and they knew what they had to do. Does Andy Reid start to say, you know, did he have some extra protection? Did he keep the route short and it worked? And now as he say, oh, no, we're all good. He's fine. He can handle it in there. I'm going to send more guys out. I'm not going to keep McKinnon in. I'm not going to chip with the tight end. I'm going to let Orlando Brown try to work against this Eagles defensive line. We mentioned the strength of schedule of the Eagles, but they still had 70 sacks. Chiefs were second in the NFL, 15 less with 55. This Eagle front can get after the quarterback, and I think Andy Reid's got to be careful to not get too excited about what they were able to do against the Bengals pass rush and keeping Mahomes upright, and make sure that they take very seriously how good that front is and their ability to get after Patrick Mahomes. You do not want this Super Bowl to look like it did against the Bucs. They're healthier on the offensive line. They'll do better than they did against the Bucs, but if he gets too cute, there's a lot of firepower on that Eagles front.
Agreed. All right, time for the off-the-wall question. Your favorite NFL official is who, or what white hat would you want to be calling the Super Bowl between the Eagles and the Chiefs? Obviously, we're stuck with Carl Jeffers. I know we all love that guy. But who would be your favorite NFL official, or what white hat would you pick to do the Super Bowl? For me, it's Bill Vinovich, because he was the white hat for the Chiefs when they won it all against the Niners.
Yeah, I'll take that. I would literally just say anybody but Carl Jeffers. I mean, I for the life of me, I cannot figure out how that man is going to be standing on the Super Bowl making calls. The NFL officiating is finally starting to get some run, and it's because we can now, in a lot of places here in Kansas, we can bet. Yep. And people, when they have a bet, they watch games closer. Yep. And, you know, it's not just on in the background anymore. You are living and dying with every snap, and people are getting upset about all of the missed calls and how bad it is. And you have all this technology and they're not using it. It's amazing to me that the officiating just seems to be going in reverse with the addition of technology. So literally anybody but Jeffers, and that is an absolute wild card. And listen, maybe that's the good news, that the Chiefs are a slight underdog, because he absolutely drags games into the mud, and underdogs do extremely well. The under and underdogs do extremely well with Jeffers' games. So listen, anybody but him, but we'll have to live with them, and hopefully he's been shamed into keeping his whistle out of his mouth and just lets the game play.
Yeah, that's what I hope for, too. Hey, man, let everybody know how they can listen to you, how they can follow you on social media. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, at Soren Petro, SorenPetro, and a couple of podcasts if you're a football fan, at the Red, Gold, and Bold podcast, wherever you get it, and our Two Deep, T-O-O, Deep, myself, Jeff Chedia, Eric Eager, Jeff Chedia from NFL Network, Eric Eager from Sumer Sports, used to be with Pro Football Focus. We do those two football ones, and if you're a Royals fan, Randy Gisarelli and I just put our latest one together last night. It's called Kauffman Corner. If you want to look that up and check it out, if you're a Royals fan, you'll enjoy that. We were breaking down the Mondesi trade and Zach Greinke coming back last night, so check those out. If you would, if you're a fan, hit those like buttons. They don't cost us nothing. Same thing for Wade. Listen, like, subscribe. It doesn't cost anything, but it helps all of us out.
Absolutely. Hey, great job as always. Always appreciate your time. Love talking sports with you, my friend. Take care of yourself and enjoy the Super Bowl coming up in a few weeks.
Wade, you're the absolute best, buddy. All the best to your family. Look forward to seeing you up here for a basketball tournament sometime.
Sounds good. It's Rand Petro, 810 WHB, Kansas City, host of the program 2 to 6 weekdays. Check them out online or just listen old-fashioned style, 810 on the AM dial.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.